Yoga Vashishta, Part 12, Simple Ways to Transform Existing Rajas and Tamas into Sattva, by Swami Surya Devananda. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time, and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness, which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge, and known, seer, sight, and seen, doer, doing, and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings, whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. The last time, we talked about simple ways to increase sattva, or natural goodness. Let us briefly review each one of those seven that we had discussed the last time before moving on. 1. Do not grieve or despair in calamities. Things happen in nature, sometimes this way and sometimes the other. What we often call calamities are things that we feel should not happen. And it is this hoping that gives rise to many other anxieties which disallow inner balance. When you do not see situations as calamities, you get a handle on the grief and despair mechanisms and tone them down, giving rise to equal vision. 2. Do not wish for what is other than what is present and what is natural. This keeps the mind in the present and does not allow desires to surge. If other conditions come, let them come. Enjoy them while they come. This keeps the mind resting in itself. 3. Rejoice in doing what is right and appropriate. Instead of seeking joy in the results of action, rejoice instead in the very act of doing wholeheartedly and in a manner that is appropriate to the situation. Since wholehearted doing and appropriateness are within, there will always be joy and satisfaction experienced within. 4. Experience the fullness of bliss and satisfaction within the heart at all times. Practicing the first three keep the mind in itself, and natural fullness, bliss, and satisfaction are experienced. 5. Be radiant with noble qualities such as friendliness. When inner joy is experienced, it reflects in noble qualities such as friendliness. This friendliness is not an outer social crowd-pleasing act, but a freedom from inner opposition to any and all. 6. Be ever in a state of equanimity. When inner opposition is thinned down or eliminated, inner balance is felt, as one's center of gravity does not oscillate when extremes manifest. This does not mean that you agree with everything. You just don't stand opposed to things and let things be as they are. 7. Ensure your conduct is always good and noble. This good and noble conduct is accumulation of all of the above. Not grieving or despairing, especially in calamities, not wishing for what is other than present or natural, rejoicing in what is right and appropriate action, delighting in the joy of self-bliss, standing unopposed to whatever occurs, which is at once friendliness, and to be ever in a state of inner balance, which requires ongoing vigilance. Friends, this powerful concoction ensures good and noble conduct, which is non-dependent on results or fruition. Along with increasing sattva, we have to do something about existing rajas or the dynamic and restless temperament, and also about tamas or the lazy, dull, or lethargic temperament. You may feel that rajas and tamas are not an issue with you in taking the word meaning at a glance, but some sort of percentage of rajas and tamas exist in all. The key is in being able to recognize their surge and being able to do the activity in those periods which puts them to good use in such a manner that gives rise to sattva in their place. This is called transmutation, and here lies the key in amassing spiritual fuel which is most necessary for yoga's inner rung of meditation. If rajas and tamas are not watched and put to constructive use, they will seek their own level and rouse up passions and dullness that can set you back hard. You have to know what guna is or quality is in operation, and while being vigilant, do the activity that is best at that time. For instance, if there is a feeling of dullness or lethargy, get out to do some physical work for yourself or as karma yoga. This will soon transmute tamas into rajas, and if done with the feeling of God's omnipresence or service unto God, it can even jump a notch to sattva. It all depends on the strength of the feeling that you can muster and sustain when the gunas change. If there is a feeling of rajas or an impulse to do something, you can channel your efforts into bhakti yoga practices like kirtan, and quite soon there may be a feeling to study or even meditate. Have an eye within at all times to discern what gunas are operating in you at all times, and do that activity which will transmute them till you have an abundance of sattva, which is the fuel for deeper practice. See, my friends, you cannot go to the store and buy sattva for meditation. You have to make this fuel. You have to make the fuel you need from existing sources. Just like if oil is needed and the only source is a deep strata of rock bed, it has to be extracted from those rocks. Some careful work has to be done, and those who persevere will have fuel. It all depends on the gunas you have in you and your enthusiastic willingness to transform them for extraction. Now, these things are not elaborated in the text of the Yoga Vashishta because Rama was Vashishta's student growing up, and it is presumed that he learned these things at that stage. Still, I think it's important for those coming to this point to know the importance of this fourth chapter, which can get overlooked as some nice but rather non-important points, to be in a hurry to get straight to meditation, only to find out that there are these surges of thoughts and feelings, and also pockets of lethargy, which one is totally unprepared to deal with. Meditation is a struggle if you have not prepared yourself just as it is a struggle to light a wet log on fire, especially if it's cold and snowing also. Among other things, ignoring this essential preparing the instrument often leads to stagnation or a fall, and hence should be addressed at the offset. The last time we discussed ways to increase sattva. Today we discuss ways to change existing rajas and tamas into sattva. Greetings. Let us begin with the first of 6 points that we have today in the ways to transform existing rajas and tamas into sattva. 1. Inquire into your own true nature and of this universe. Who am I? How has this universe arisen? And remain indifferent to it. The mind runs outward to know who and what, and hence it's important to keep the attention within. At the basic level, you will see that what you perceive is one thing, and what the mind is making it out to be is quite another thing. You can also always or easily deal with what is perceived without the mind's add-on all the time, or these paint strokes. Keep the outer, which is what appears, and the inner, which is our reactions, in the same plane, because they are on the same plane. What you see and what you feel are not happening in two different places, my friend. They're happening in the same place. And so we have to look at them together to be able to separate what you see or what is actually happening with that add-on of how we feel to it or how we are predisposed to it. As vigilance becomes natural and ongoing, you can begin inquiry without loss or a break in perception, even while you move about. Inquiry keeps the mind on the source. And initially, this inquiry need not be a very deep inquiry like the kind you would do in meditation. It can simply be looking at what is or what happens as it happens outwardly and what comes up. And looking within itself separates the two of them. If we don't look within or keep them in the same field of observation, they get lumped together and they get taken as one package deal. Conditioning gets mixed with perception as perception, and then the problem starts or the problem worsens. Conditioning, my friends, is held together by the glue of rajas and tamas, and weakening conditioning dries up rajas and tamas. It also works the other way. When we dry up rajas and tamas, we weaken conditioning. Initially, it does not matter very much if we don't begin self-inquiry as long as there is self-observation. Self-observation will lead to self-inquiry later on. When the shallow layers of conditioning are dried up and the deeper layers will themselves become a lot calmer and suitable for meditation. This brings us to our second point. Avoid unworthy company, conduct, and inactivity. Now, my friends, with this, we have to look at the times we live in and the impact of all this political correctness. Political correctness increases lack of clarity. When we are trying to do what is acceptable at all times, and in a manner that is acceptable at all times, we often forget what is good and what is right. That can get eclipsed. It's not that these two are in opposition to one another, but we have to know how to give gravity to the situation correctly so the outer does not completely eclipse the inner. The important thing about words is the intent, but political correctness dwells on the word itself and has made communication very difficult. Being concerned with the points to be made allows us to get over the gridlock. Now let's get back to this unworthy conduct or unworthy company or unworthy activity which we are talking about. Unworthy, my friends, does not mean that it is not good, it is bad, it is terrible, or we have to have an opinion on it. Unworthy is anything that does not support your worthy aspiration. Aspiration is always worthy. That's why it's worth aspiring for. If it's not worth aspiring for, it's not much of an aspiration at all, isn't it? So aspiration is worthy, and anything that's unworthy is to be avoided. Unworthy, in its truest sense, is it doesn't live up to your aspiration. It doesn't lead to your aspiration. Quite simple. Merely seek that which supports your aspiration and let your conduct and activity always reflect your aspiration to a good degree. Gradually, my friends, there will be an inner shift from all things that are non-conducive to all things that are conducive, and this feeling will rise and get stronger within you as you go along. This brings us to number 3. Remember the all-devouring death. Now, my friends, here again a little preemptive word. This is not a doom and gloom suggestion, but a very important and practical reality check which keeps us awake at all times. We go around in the circles of habit as if mounted on a Ferris wheel, though we have complete freedom to do otherwise. Remembering what Vasishtha calls the all-devouring death is necessary to rouse you from the complacency of tamas that it gives rise to. When tamas rises, rajas then suggests this, that, and the other, which may be quite different from all things that are conducive to your aspiration. So remembering the all-devouring death is not a doom and gloom mood, but a wake-up call to reality once again, as the illusion of time and complacency themselves are doom and gloom. It would be useful to even write this down in a few places and remind ourselves of this visibly, as we can avoid complacency's pull. They say that time and tide wait for no one. Friends, you cannot do rigorous sadhana when the body is aged and the work today and family life have taken their toll on you mentally. Remembering the all-devouring death is a direct blow to complacency, which is not your friend at all. 4. Abandon identification of the self or the infinite consciousness with the body composed of flesh and bones. This is very important in the practice of meditation or the practice for meditation. Getting over body consciousness in meditation does not happen if you are fully rooted in it all the rest of the time. Ongoing and relentless vigilance is the key to being aware of all the urges, to feel and act in the ways that strengthen identification with the body. Now, my friends, this does not mean that you ignore the body, but being fully awake, you are aware that urges that rise within are actual needs of the body, or and cravings are a different thing. When panning for gold, one has to sift through large amounts of dirt and rock to find one speck of gold. Similarly, you will have to sift through the mind continuously to get rid of all of its rajas and tamas, or its energy that makes conditioning so strong and vehement. And this happens by watching the mind continually without remission all the time. The images may be there. It does not matter much if the images are there or if they are not there. Let them be. The problem is in the energy and the feeling that is infused into those images. And it is this potent mixture of image and energy together that makes it volatile. Number 5. Inwardly behold the consciousness that knits together all beings that exist in this universe. The light that shines in the sun is the same that exists and illumines the smallest of insects, and it is that light of the infinite consciousness. Friends, you have to extend all beings beyond its verbal implication, as there is no non-being, period. In the ancient days, people would even say a little prayer when they arose in the morning as a sort of apology, and this formed a powerful reminder of the truth throughout the day. The prayer went somewhat to these words, "Mother, forgive me, for I am about to put my feet on thee, but I have no place else to put them as I arise to do what needs to be done." Such was the mindset that started the day, and there was a prayer similar to this as an apology for all mistakes inadvertently made, and also a prayer for strength to not make these mistakes the next day. Swami Venkateshananda has written, "The recognition of divine omnipresence is itself self-surrender." And another Western mystic, Brother Lawrence, speaks about it in his little inspiring book, The Practice of the Presence of God. A very similar thing of always practicing that we are, or reminding ourselves that we are, in the presence of the infinite, and second to that, none exists. If you are sincere, you will understand that emblazing this feeling on the heart tablet is very important till the focus has sharpened to the level that it stays unbroken. The constant and ongoing repetition of the mantra, along with the image of the Ishta Devata or your chosen ideal, will help in giving rise to this feeling. When the feeling is able to be held within, it's easy to sustain it in all activities. See, my friends, breathing and mental oscillation or thoughts in the mind are very, very closely linked. So when thoughts come in that seem to shake up the psyche, our breathing is going to get affected. We will at once be conscious of our breathing because it has changed. Something physically has changed. The breathing has speeded up. When you become aware of the breathing, since your practice of aligning the mantra to your breathing has been in place, you will at once start or resume or become aware of the mantra. Being aware of the mantra and the breathing will keep you from being caught up in conditioning or these rises and surges of feelings that prop up when certain conditions seem to be present. And this itself will allow you to keep getting over the tide of Rajas and Tamas's surge. Now we come to the sixth and last point. Engage yourself in the inquiry into the nature of reality in the company of holy ones. By these means, even those who are tamasic or lazy, inert, or of a dull temperament, or rajasic, which is having a dynamic and impure temperament, can attain the characteristics of one born with a preponderance of sattva. Sattva has to be earned by the sweat of your brow. At every step of the way, you have to keep the mind from seeking the path of least resistance. And what is this path of least resistance? Of habit. Because it's easy, it can be automated. So inquiry begins with first seeing things as they appear. Inquiry then turns on its source, and the inquirer seeks to know oneself or one's true nature. To do this without wobbling too much, it's best to spend time with those who are well-rooted in it. As small hints, active and passive, from those who are grounded, can get you off to a sound footing. My friends, very much has been written on this, and much is available in the different media sources. But it is quite one thing to hear about it, and it is quite another thing to see it in function, in normal day-to-day function. How does one keep this focus on the inner while dealing with the outer without stumbling, wobbling, or being out of place, inwardly or outwardly? How does one do this? It's quite something to do it, because it's not an act. It is a complete change that has occurred, where one's inner consciousness is facing the truth of things and is not attracted in anymore to the rise and surge of conditioning. Conditioning may be there, my friends. I'm not saying that it won't be there. It may be there. It may throw all the tantrums and all the dramas that are possible. The question is not to get tripped up on it. And how does this happen? To be able to deal with what is without being tripped up by what is not, by conditioning, is something that is quite different. It's not an act. It is a complete change in one's center of gravity, where the inner consciousness is anchored on something differently. And it's no longer anchored on the changing, on conditioning at all. When one sees this for some time, there is an inner letting go of habit. See, habit is just a force that is so strong. And when we see something quite different, a different modus operandi, a different way of functioning, which is healthier because it is not tripped by all this rise and surge of conditioning, an inner change or an inner letting go of habitual ways or of habit is possible. This letting go is a gain and not a loss. Today, we covered 6 simple ways to transform existing rajas and tamas into sattva. Let us briefly review the 6 points that we have covered today. Inquire into your own nature, your own true nature, and of this universe. Who am I? How did this universe arise? And remain indifferent to it. Number 2, avoid unworthy company, conduct, or inactivity. And if I may add a note here, without condemnation or approval. Just avoid unworthy company. Unworthy is everything that is not worthy of your aspiration. Number 3, remember the all-devouring death. Number 4, abandon identification of the self or the infinite consciousness with the body composed of flesh and bones. Number 5, inwardly behold the consciousness that knits together all beings that exist in the universe. Remember, the light that shines in the sun is the same light that illumines the smallest of insects. And that light is the light of infinite consciousness. And lastly, number 6, engage yourself in the inquiry into the nature of reality in the company of holy ones. Friends, Today we covered Vasishtha's ways to transform existing Rajas and Tamas into Sattva. This concludes the important teachings of the fourth chapter. We began the last time with increasing Sattva. This was the second half of transforming existing Rajas and Tamas into Sattva. Next time, we begin with the important teachings in the fifth chapter. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF handout, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.